We continue with our sermons in the book of Genesis, turning again this evening to chapter 13. The book of Genesis in chapter 13. This evening we come to look particularly at the second half of the chapter from verse 10 to the end, but beginning to read once again in verse 1. And Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abraham was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went in his journeys from the south even to Bethel, on to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Hai, on to the place of the altar, which he had built there at the first. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abraham said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abraham, after that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed for ever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abraham removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Amen. This evening we come to look at the second of the two choices that this 13th chapter of the book of Genesis sets before us. The first choice, you remember, is the one that we looked at last time, and which is made by that man Abraham, and which is meant to serve as a positive illustration to us concerning the life of faith, that we might endeavour to live in a way that is well-pleasing to God. You remember the situation of that chapter. Abraham has now returned from the land of Egypt to the land of Canaan again. He has returned with Lot, his nephew, and we are told that both men are very rich in cattle and have many, many flocks and herds between them. Eventually there arise a series of disputes between the herdmen of Abraham's flocks and the herdmen of Lot's, until finally the word is brought to Abraham, and in verse 8 of the chapter, we have the choice then that Abraham makes in the light of the situation in which he now finds himself at this time in his life. And Abraham said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou wilt depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. It is a choice, you remember, that Abraham is making. It's couched in the terms of an offer. But it's a choice for all that when we see the reality and the truth of it. For what Abraham is in fact choosing to do there is this. He is choosing to make God his choice. And he is choosing to put the whole affair that he is now confronted with into the hands of the Lord his God, that God in fact might choose his inheritance from him. There's a sense in which Abraham anticipates the psalmist David. The Lord shall choose mine inheritance for me. And Abraham is doing that, you remember, in the light of a choice that he has just already made, that choice that took him into Egypt. And now, having come out of Egypt again, we are shown this man, Abraham, this example, this illustration of the life of faith for us that God has given. We have shown him now, having moved from that place where his faith was greatly under fire and greatly under trial, to this place where his faith now stands established again. He had lifted up his eyes, you remember, at the time of famine in Canaan. He had looked away to the fields of Egypt, and he had decided, he had chosen to go into Egypt to sojourn there. What a terrible choice it was, my friends. And he had made that choice, obviously, as he had looked from the situation that he was in with all its hardness and with all its irksomeness to the green fields away there in Egypt, and so he had chosen. And we must say, he had chosen back. Abraham is back, my friends, in chapter 13. You remember his route back that we looked at last week. From Egypt to the south, to Bethel, to the place where he had pitched his tent, to the place where the altar that he had made at the first was. And there he called on the name of the Lord his God. And now when it comes to another crisis in his life, you see, Abraham won't choose rashly again. But he says, as we've said, the Lord shall choose for me. And as he makes his offer to Lot, you choose. Choose whatever you like. In that offer, my friends, don't fail to see for 1 minute Abraham's choice to make God his choice and to have God choose his inheritance for him. So then the illustration, as we've said, with regards to the positive things, with regards to our life of faith. God, in his word, sets us examples, as we've said, with regards to the life of faith. Here is Abraham. Here is an example. With all the lessons attendant on that choice that we looked at last week, that's a positive example for us with regards to our life of faith. Well then. This evening now we come to the second choice, the choice of Lot. It's not a positive illustration at all. And what is set before us there is a set of lessons that we could only call negative, perhaps, in the extreme. If we have ears to hear and hearts to understand, then we'll see it. The Lord, you see, not only instructs us by saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. The Lord also instructs us by saying, that is not the way. Turn ye from it. And in the example of Abraham, we have lessons with regards to the first, this is the way. In this man, Lot, this evening, we have lessons with regards to the second, this is not the way, in the way of the life of faith. Well then, let's turn to our verses. Lot's choice. And we read about it, of course, from verse 10 of the chapter, after that Abraham has spoken to him. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. Lot lifted up his eyes. He saw all the rich valley of the greenness of the Jordan River. And he lifted up his eyes and he chose to live in that valley. But not only did Lot choose to live in that valley, my friends, Lot also chose himself, as it says there, the cities of the plain, perhaps moving from one city to the other until finally he came and dwelt in the city of Sodom itself. And as far as the illness of Lot's choice is concerned in coming and eventually dwelling in the city of Sodom, we have that clearly enough set forth before us in God's assessment of the men of that place in verse 13. But it says the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. What's contained in Lot's choice? As far as an overall lesson for us is concerned, what's the lesson that we're being shown? Surely it's this, my friends. In Lot's choice, we have the virtual abandonment of the pilgrim life. That's what you read when you read the choice of Lot. If the Bible ever made out anything for us and set it out clearly for us, it's this, that when we're called into the life of faith, when we become Christians, if you like, we are called into a life that is really set forth before us as a pilgrim life as far as the essential things of this world are concerned. We are pilgrims in this world. That's what the whole point of the life of Abraham for us at this time that we are being shown is all about. You remember what's happened to Abraham? He's been called out of Ur of the Chaldees, out of that settled situation, out of that place where his roots were right down in the things of this world. He has been called to wander. He has been called to dwell in tents. There's going to be no settled existence whatsoever for this man Abraham for the next 100 years of his life until he eventually dies and has to purchase a parcel of ground first for his wife, and also he'll be led in it. Throughout the life of Abraham, it's wandering, it's unsettledness, it's tense, so that, as Paul says, he wandered as a stranger, confessing himself that here he had no continuing city. He was a pilgrim. That's what Abraham was. And don't you see, what Abraham takes on to do in practice is being set before us with regards to what we're to take on to do by way of principle with regards to our life of faith on this earth. How do we view our life on this earth? Are our roots so sunk down into those detrimental things of this world with regards to our life of faith that it's the world that's dragging us away from the things of our God? My friends, we're to turn away to Abraham and to those wanderers of old, and we're to see in them, in their practice, we're to see the principle that's to underscore our life of faith in this world. We confess ourselves to be strangers and pilgrims in this world. Not that we live in bivouacs or anything else, but our attitude of heart and mind, that's what it's all about. What these men did in the body, they're illustrating for us the attitude of heart and mind that's to belong to those who profess to be the people of God. It's the pilgrim picture that the Bible sets before us with regards to our Christian life, and it's the pilgrim picture that's so vividly set forth in the life of this dear old father of the faithful, this man Abraham, and which we're to see by way of positive example for us with regards to our life here in this earth. Now then, when it comes to Lot, what we're surely being presented with here, as I say, in an overall picture, is the picture of that dangerous attitude of heart and mind that begins to abandon the concepts of a pilgrim life for us in this earth. Look at verse 5. You remember last time we said that there were antecedents to Abraham's choice. In other words, his choice wasn't made in a vacuum. It was made on the back of a certain set of principles that he himself had laid hold of. Now, there are certain things that go before Lot. For one thing, note this, you don't find Lot going back to the altar where Abraham went back to. But there's something even more significant than that. Look at verse 5. And Lot also, it says, which went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents. What are flocks? What are herds? What are tents? My friends, they are the wherewithal of a pilgrim life. They're the accoutrements of a nomadic life. They are exactly the things that Abraham had been equipped with of the Lord in order that he might lead his wandering, nomadic, pilgrim life all the days of his life on this earth as the friend of God. More, when you read of herds and cattle and all the rest, remember this, that the one thing that the old people of God needed was those essential things by which they could offer sacrifice unto the Lord our God. You remember Abraham. He was a shepherd. Why was he a shepherd? In order to feed and clothe him and his family? No. Because at that point, you remember, our first parents, nor those that immediately followed, didn't eat any meat. He had those flocks and herds because he had ready access to God by the sacrifices which they represented. And this man Lot, my friends, he had all the things that pertain to that nomadic, wandering, pilgrim life, plus all the necessary things in order to offer sacrifice unto the Lord his God. Lot also, it says, had flocks and herds and tents. Now, there's one great question that needs to be answered. What became of them? What became of Lot's flocks and herds and tents? Don't you know the course that he took? He lifted up his eyes and he saw the plain of the valley of the River Jordan, that valley that encircled the cities of the plain. He moved down into the valley, and then, as we're told, he began to move nearer and nearer to Sodom, until later on in the account we read that he came and he dwelt in Sodom itself. In fact, he became an elder of the city, for it says he sat in the gate. He was one of the town councillors. He had obviously a big house in Sodom because he entertained angels unaware, you remember. Right then, so he comes and he eventually moves into Sodom and into that big house in Sodom. Where are his cattle? Where are his flocks? Where is his tent? My friends, even at that point where he was pitching his tent towards Sodom, even at that point, he might have had some use for them. But where are they once he moves into the city and once he moves into his house? You don't have cows wandering about the streets of the city of Sodom, and you don't put up a tent in a backyard when you've got a house the size that Lot must have had. In fact, when the five kings come and attack Lot and Sodom and the rest, you'll read about Abraham going out and bringing back Lot's goods, not his cattle. Not his herds, not his tents. What happened to them? Didn't he sell them? Didn't he trade them? Didn't he sell out the pilgrim life in order to live in Sodom? And my friends, what you have there in that man is a man that abandoned the pilgrim life step by step and bit by bit until he finds himself right there in that evil city. He's forgotten, you see. Forgotten what God had called him to with Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees. He's exactly like the man that we've been looking at in the second epistle of Peter in the mornings. The myopic man, you remember, nearsighted, blind, cannot see afar off, and hath forgotten that he was purged from his old sins, has forgotten why God has called him from darkness to life. My friends, in a word, Lot forgot what his calling was, to wander the face of this earth with Abraham, to be an example of the pilgrim life of all the spiritual pilgrims that would ever come after. So he took his first step, you see. He made his choice. He turned away from the stranger's life until he becomes engulfed, as it were, in the affairs of this world. Now, surely that's the overall lesson under the hand of the Lord, the picture lesson for us, you see, that we can see it and read it and see it clearly because the Lord remembers that we're children. The Lord remembers how many aids we need. Lot is finally delivered from Sodom. We'll see that in the ensuing weeks, but now, for now, it's a warning bell, you see, that rings out into our hearts and minds, if we can hear, a warning bell. See that we're determined to keep on that pilgrim path, even when it's uphill, even when it's difficult. See that you keep on it, because the pilgrim life is one of the most essential characterizations of the whole of the Christian life that you will ever find in the Bible, from beginning to end. That's why we love old Mr. John Bunyan. Because, my friends, he hit the nail right in the head when he called his great classic The Pilgrim's Progress. From this world, says he, to that which is to come. I lay me down in a certain place, and I dreamed a dream, don't you remember? And the dream that he dreamed was that pilgrim going from this world to that world which is to come, but going through this world to that world which is to come. The pilgrim's progress through this world. And that concept, I say, runs right through the Bible, is set before us there in the life of Abraham in a gloriously positive form, is now no less set before us in Lot, in a negative form, that we might see both sides clearly together and read both sides to our hearts and minds. You know, there's a group of people in the Bible, I think many years ago we took them up and dealt with them in the Wicket Gate. They're called the Rechabites. And in fact, there's an organization, I think, still on the go called the Rechabites. They're called the Rechabites because they're total abstainers. They don't drink any strong drink. Well, you see, that's true of the Rechabites in the Bible. But the reason that they didn't drink any wine was, in fact, this: the length of time that it took to cultivate the vine. And the thing that really characterizes the Rechabites in the Bible isn't the fact that they didn't merely just not drink wine, but it's the fact that they would not settle on this earth. And God, my friends, had raised up the Rechabites as a testimony to that attitude of heart and mind in Israel, which had dug itself into the things of this world and had forgotten its true nature under God to be a light to his glory in the world. God left the Rechabites and said the Rechabites, when Jeremiah came to them, we drink no wine, we build no houses, we sow no seed, we plant no vineyards, we dwell in tents that we may live many days in the land where ye be strangers. And they went away back, my friends, to those infant days of Israel, and they held forth a testimony to what God had called that old nation to be in this world, pilgrims to the glory of his name. God commends them. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab the son of Rechab shall not want a man to stand before me forever. God honors the pilgrim life, my friends, even when it's only lived out there in practice, because the pilgrim life truly lived out in practice is that light shining for all generations of the Lord's people to come, that the pilgrim life in heart and mind is the right attitude of heart and mind for the life of faith that he will cause us to live. pilgrims. That's what we are. And come away now, if there's any truth in our hearts and minds, you'll know how often it's very irksome to be a pilgrim in this world. Well then, let's be careful. Look then in the light of that, and I'm sure it's a telling phrase that's used there with regards to that region that lay round about those cities of the plain of Jordan that Lot then chooses. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord. My friends, dear old Lot lifted up his eyes there, and he looked down onto the Jordan Valley, and he said to himself, "My, that place is just like the Garden of Eden." And he decided to grab himself a wee bit of earthly paradise. That's what he did. Oh, no, no, no. He has to veneer it over, you see, with some kind of spirituality. Not really the lushness of the grass he's looking at. It's like the garden of the Lord. It's like Eden. It's like paradise. And he makes his choice. And my friend, it's a feature of human nature, aye, the human nature that still dwells within the hearts and minds of every one of us, though we be the Lord's people and regenerated by the Holy Spirit. It's part and parcel of our human nature to make ourselves some kind of a heaven on earth, even though we endanger that heaven above to do it. And that's what we read if we read Lot aright. Don't you remember Abraham last week from the other side of it? Lot, he says, choose whichever part you want of all the land. The land of promise. Yes, the land of promise. For as we said last time, my friends, Abraham is quite willing to let go any part of the land of promise below in order to lay firmer hold on the land of promise above, of which the old earthly Canaan was only ever a picture and nothing more, and is nothing more. But you see the contrast now in Lot. That man that has abandoned the pilgrim life through this world will now desire to get himself a little paradise in this world. And he'll tell himself, well, it's like Eden. Like the garden of the Lord, his eyes saw that which he desired to have. There's another telling phrase in the verse as well. Read it again. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest on to Zoar. Ha ha, now we're getting nearer the point, are we not? What was it that he really saw? He saw a replica of Egypt. And hadn't they gone down into Egypt when Abraham had made that ill choice, my friends? And hadn't they now come up out of Egypt? And hadn't Abraham made his choice? And now Lot makes his choice. Let me tell you the two differences in the two choices. Abraham had not only come up out of Egypt. Egypt had come up out of Abraham. But as far as Lot was concerned, that Egypt in which he had sojourned for that time, though he had come out of it bodily, that Egypt was still very much in him, in his heart and his mind. And oh, he saw Egypt there. And my, hadn't we a great time in Egypt? And he made his choice. And I tell you, we all like that wee bit of the world, you see. We all like our earthly paradise, our utopia, our Shangri-La, our Camelot, our bally high, our brigadoon even, if you like. We all like our mystical paradise. And we'll tell ourselves that we're, why, even doing something kind of spiritual. And all that we're really doing is failing to be pilgrims and strangers. You see, the Lord tells us these things, my friends, because the Lord knows us through and through. Don't take offense because God knows your heart. Don't do that. And God knows us. And God knows how he will have us. And he says, my child, look, here you are. Here's how you act. Here's how you think so often. Don't do it. Don't do it. There's another phrase that ought to be a telling one for us, for it just about sums up the fate of all such earthly paradises that men and women endeavour to have. And Lot lifted up his eyes, it says, and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. What a phrase. And it's a phrase, my friends, to turn us away from those choices that we would make and which we would interpret as an earthly paradise for us. All such earthly paradises are going to pass into the past tense. And from that realm of eternity, God will look back and we'll see whatever it was that we chose. We'll see that it only appeared like that to us before God came and destroyed the thing. Surely that in itself ought to work well in our hearts. We take a good look at whatever it is we imagine, we think we need, but we take a good look not only here forward to it, but away by faith into eternity, back to what it will be, dust and ashes. And then we make our choice accordingly. Like the Lord told the man, you remember, with the full barns, there he was. Now, my soul, eat, take your rest, be full. You remember the Lord's words? Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, and then who shall those things be? What's going to become of them all? The full barns, the paradises, the utopias, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. But soon the Lord would destroy it. Let's bear this in mind, my friends. If we want to read the story of Lot, you mustn't just read chapter 13 of Genesis here. What you must read especially is chapter 19 of Genesis. That's where Lot has been in Sodom for a long time. That's when God comes to destroy that city, yet in his mercy he will bring out Lot. And in fact, he'll have to bring him out in such a way that those two heavenly messengers will have to lay their hands upon him and lead him out. Read about his wife and remember and never forget it that Lot took his wife into that situation where she could barely extricate herself. Remember that. Remember, my friends, that when we lead others into sin and our sinful ways, we can be leading them deeper in than we're going ourselves. Remember his daughters who married two of the men of Sodom. And if you want reading out of the Word of God, you read those last few verses of Genesis chapter 19. Which are virtually unspeakable, but that God has given. Don't read 13 without reading 19, but don't read 19 without reading 13. Chapter 19 of Genesis is the end of the course of Lot's earthly life, but this 13 is the beginning of it, my friend. And what we need to be concerned with is not just where we're going to end up, but whether or not we're taking any course in our life that's going to take us to that terminus. And God in his mercy here is showing us, don't you see, the bit by bit and step by step course of Lot that ends in that terrible chapter. So Lot makes his choice. Solemn word. Verse 11. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. That wee word at the end of verse 12, of course, probably about says it all, has no doubt been well preached on through many years of the Church of Christ's history. Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom. That's an echo, you see, an echo of the Egypt thing that took place in chapter 12. You remember there? They were only going to sojourn in Egypt. They weren't telling themselves that they were going to live down there. No, no. They were just going down for a little space of time, a sojourn. That's what a sojourn is. And now Lot, you see, he's not brazen enough to say, look, I'm going to live in Sodom. No, no, we never do that. First of all, he's going to live in the Jordan Valley. Then he looks around, as it were, those cities that encircle the Jordan Valley. Then he ups the pegs of his tent and he pitches towards Sodom. In fact, the literal reading is he moved nearer and nearer and nearer to Sodom. Then he'll be in it. Had you asked Lot why he was going into Sodom or towards it and eventually into it, he probably would have given reasons for it. Well, you see, this nomadic life, it's all right. It's not much good for the children. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to take my tent and I'm going to move towards the city. Then I can still be a nomad, then I can still be a pilgrim, still a wanderer, but at least I'll have the facilities of the city near my right hand. My friends, we make a Lot's choice very often when we go in a caravan. It's nice to go up into the mountains. It's not too good when the rain comes on, you've got nothing to do with the children. So you get a caravan, you see, that's well enough in the country, but within shooting distance of some centre of activity for the bad weather. Well, maybe Lot thought like that. He would have the best of both worlds. And so he went towards Sodom until he eventually went into it. My, he should have taken God's assessment of Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. What a comment. We know what the sin was. It's a sin that has passed into the very English language that we speak. The sin of sodomy. We may note the environment in which men sinned that heinous sin. Perhaps this is the first case of it, the first incident of it. You see, there's sin in the heart, but the sin of the human heart is quite ingenious. It's always got ways of reproducing itself, as it were, in new forms from time to time. This was a new form of the sin of the human heart. As old William Gurnall, I think it is, says, he says, be careful of applying your wit to inventing new sins, in case God comes and invents new judgments for your sins. And these men, you see, my friends, they concocted this sin and they brought this type of sin together. Where did they do it? In some of the slums of this world. They did it in that place with all the lushness and the greenness and the provision and the bounty of the Jordan Valley. Take the people out of the slums, we're told, and they'll not sin and they'll not do wrong. No, no. Because didn't our first parents sin in Eden itself in the face of all the Lord's goodness towards them? But you see the lesson. If we'll make our choice then by the grace of God, let's have God's assessment of the direction in which we're going and any of the choices that we're going to make. Sodom wouldn't have been any mystery to Lot, but it's the old story. Where there's a will, there's a way. And dear old Lot had a will to go to Sodom. And he found a way to go there, regardless of what God had said concerning that place. Well then, how do you view the story of Lot? As I said in 2 Peter, we've been running very parallel in a sense with regards to this life of faith. What could you say about Lot? Can you say about Lot, well, here's a saint. After all, isn't he called Righteous Lot? In 2 Peter itself. And here's a saint of God then. Yet you see what he did, you see how he lived, yet God saved him at the end. Therefore, surely I can live then as I please and I'll be saved at the end. And well, I can have the best of both worlds. This world now and glory hereafter. Surely that would be a no more Blue Mondays kind of Christianity. No, my friends, let me repeat. The story of Lot is written to show how far a saint can go, not how far a saint may go and still be assured of salvation. In other words, the story of Lot is meant to be towards us a sad spectacle of a man that dishonored his God. And if we think to dishonor our God, my friends, we might prove too much. Here's how Paul puts it. Paul knows that we're sinners, knows that we sin, knew that he himself sinned. The things that I would do, he says, I do not, O miserable man that I am. But he's already dealt with that situation and he thanks God for it. And he says, where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. And here's the sin of this man Lot in Sodom. And here he makes his choice and all the rest. And he sins. But you can only say about him, where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Because God brought him out of Sodom at the last. What then, says Paul, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Shall we pitch our tents towards Sodom? Shall we go and live in the city? Well, grace abounds. And Paul's answer, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any more therein? And I tell you, my friends, to adopt that attitude that you, as old Mr. Honest showed, as you remember a few weeks ago from Pilgrim's Progress, to adopt that attitude where we think we can imitate the vices of the Lord's saints is perhaps to prove too much. Too much. So he makes his choice. Don't narrow it down to an actual mere location. It stands up to that. Many people have gone to places or done things that has indeed constituted a Lot's choice for their life. But don't bring it down to that. The real application is contained, I say, in the attitude of heart and mind that would take hold upon us and lead us away off from the pilgrim type life that God has caused us to live in this earth. Time and time and time again, we're confronted with the hardness of the Christian path. Is that not the truth? And time again, we would lift up our eyes and we'd peek over the hedge and we'd see Mr. Bunyan again, if you like, Mr. Bunyan's bypath meadow. And, oh, don't you remember how it looked to he and the other pilgrim? How soft the grass looked on that side of the hedge. And because the path was so hard, they would draw aside. Just for a minute. And it's that, you see. And it's pitching our tents toward that which is really an abandonment of our Christian profession. Live where there is best trading for the soul. That's what old Richard Baxter said. That's where you pitch your tent. Live where there is best trading for the soul. My friends, the location is in our hearts and our minds. It's to seek out those parts of this world that are best to our pilgrim existence, though irksome perhaps to us in our natural life, best to that life which shall never end. So Lot makes his choice. So we've mentioned the fruits of it. As we've said, you'll find them especially coming to their harvest in chapter 19. But that's only how it ends. Read how it begins, so that we can be taken away and avoid such an end in our own spiritual life. Most potent and important lesson for us at this time, my friends, is this: while it is yet day, settle your tent wherever God will have you to be, in the things of himself, for that is best. Well, just a few minutes to finish off this present chapter. It's to go then to that side. For if we have the fruits eventually of Lot's choice, then we have the fruits of Abraham's choice. We have them, of course, in all the chapters and verses that speak about Abraham right here and throughout the rest of the part of Genesis that relates to him. But even now, you see, you have the fruits of Abraham's choice already beginning to be presented to us. Verse 14. And the Lord said unto Abraham after that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Now, I don't think we should lose the situation. Don't you see the situation? After that Lot was separated from him, and off goes Lot, my friends. Why, he's as light as a daisy. He's made a good choice. His old business head tells him that he's come right out on the best side of things. And he starts off with his caravan down towards the Jordan Valley. And he's absolutely up in the moon, as you would say. And Abraham, let's face it, my friends. How easy it is to adopt that attitude of the psalmist when we see the prosperity of men that have turned away from God. Then we begin to say, I've washed my heart in innocence, I've cleansed my hands in vain. And Abraham was only human. Maybe he felt like David. You know, there was one time in David's life towards the end of it when he penned the 119th Psalm. And it seemed as though all the world was against him. And he looks back, as David often does in his Psalms, if we read them carefully. He looks back to one of the scenes of his young life, when he lived in a cottage there in the hills of Galilee with his father Jesse. And when they would have taken the wine bottles in those days, and they would have taken an old wine skin that they were finished with and just hung it up somewhere on the roof near the fire, so that over the years the smoke went up from the fire and the old bottle became more hardened and more parched and more black. And David looks to himself and he's like an old forgotten wineskin. He says, Lord, I am become like a bottle in the smoke. For like a bottle I'm become, that in the smoke is set, I'm black and parched with grief. Yet I thy statutes not forget. He felt like that in himself. Until he remembered the word of the Lord, and the Lord's word came to him in force. Then it didn't matter if he was like a bottle in the smoke. And now Abraham, my friend, sees Lot going away off there down towards that rich green valley. And he stands there, as it were, absolutely isolated. Separated from the man that had come up out of Egypt with him. And right at that precise point comes our God, our gracious God. And the Lord said unto Abraham, after that Lot was separated from him, note the contrast, lift up now thine eyes. Read verse 10 again, my friends. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld. And the Lord said unto Abraham, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. What is it? Well, of course, it's the reaffirmation of the covenant, isn't it? That he has already given to him there at the beginning of verse 12. It's God showing Abraham that all the land of Canaan is indeed given to him by covenant right, and to his seed after him. Is that all? No, that's not all. That's not. But God, in reaffirming the covenant to him in the physical, my friends, is reaffirming the real covenant to him, spiritually understood. And my friends, it's heaven that Abraham is seeing when God tells him to look and see Canaan. How far could he see anyway? There's a hill in front of him. He can't see beyond the hill. Can he see? He can see as far as the eye of faith can see, and that means he can see forever. Forever. You know, there's a tremendous word in Hebrews chapter 11. You remember that's the word about the faith. You remember it's the word that speaks about Abraham, about him sojourning in the land, about counting himself a stranger and all the rest. Now, it speaks about Abraham, speaks about Isaac, speaks about Sarah, speaks about Jacob. In other words, it speaks about all of those who in fact received no inheritance in the land of Canaan. You remember Abraham had to buy a cave in which to bury his old beloved wife Sarah. No inheritance, but, says Stephen, he gave him none inheritance in the land. Now, when you get to verse 16 of Hebrews chapter 11, you read a tremendous thing. But it says, now they desire a better country, that is in heavenly. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. What an utterance that is. How could our God, my friends, ever place himself in a situation where he would be ashamed to call himself the God of his people? What an utterance. I'll tell you, if it were possible, it would be if God didn't keep his promise. Therefore, If God promised to give Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Sarah an inheritance, my friends, he gave them that inheritance and is called their God because that inheritance wasn't Canaan. That inheritance was heaven. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God because he hath prepared for them a city. A city. Heavenly Jerusalem. The city of the redeemed of the Lord. Oh, but you say, doesn't it say there that God says he'll give them this forever? I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed be numbered. Verse 15, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. You see, we need to read the Bible aright. As I said this morning, my friends, would to God we wouldn't start in the middle of things. And that word forever in the Bible, it's a great word, but it's always determined by the context in which it's used. So that God comes, you remember, and speaks to Phinehas, the son of Aaron, about being a priest forever. How can Phinehas be a priest forever when he lives 70 years and then be gathered unto his father like the rest of? You get it with regards to the laws about a servant. Then his master shall bring him into the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or onto the doorpost. And his master shall bore his ear through with an awl. And he shall serve him forever. How can he serve him forever when he's going to die? But he'll serve him forever as long as that forever pertains to him being a slave. And Phinehas will be a priest forever. As long as that forever pertains to him being a priest. And the land of Canaan shall be given to Abraham and his seed forever, for the period of time that there is such a thing on this earth as a physical seed of Abraham, namely until Christ comes. When there is then no Abrahamics after the flesh, but ye are all one in Christ Jesus. And the only forever that is forever is that which passes into the only realms in which forever is meaningless, that is the heavenly and the eternal and the spiritual. It's heaven that he sees, my friends. He gave Abraham that inheritance that he promised to give him, not Canaan, but heaven. And what does he tell him to do? Arise, he says in verse 17. Walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. And what's that a picture of? My friends, that's the pilgrim. Go on, Abraham, says the Lord. Walk through this world. Walk through the length of it and through the breadth of it. Keep walking through it. For this world is not your home. Verse 18. Then Abraham removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord his God. Down comes and up goes Abraham's tent again, my friends. For throughout his life, he confessed that he was a stranger and a pilgrim, says Paul, in this world. Well then, whose choice? Whose choice? Lot's choice or Abraham's choice? Surely, my friends, what we need to pray for is God's grace to make Abraham's choice. To make God our choice, to choose to have God, to choose our inheritance for us. I'll tell you what God will choose for us. He will choose a pilgrim life. A pilgrim life. For that's his choice for Abraham. Until all his pilgrim days are over. Then he will settle in a city. With foundations. Whose builder and maker is God. Our father Abraham. Our father Abraham.